Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. I'm James Atkinson, Senior Brand Manager at DK Eyewitness.
And I'm Lucy Richards, Senior Editor at DK Eyewitness.
And welcome to Where To Go, where every fortnight we find out more about the world's favourite travel destinations with those people who know those places best. Mm. And today, Lucy, where are we off to?
We're off to Seoul.
Yes. So Seoul, which sort of seems to be on the lips of like kind of everyone in the past couple of years. I feel like, South Korea has been like a sort of cultural sort of like mecca for years and years and years to those in the know. Mm. And that knowledge just seems to be widespread. So from Oscar winning films, massive bingeable Netflix TV series.
Yes.
And, you know, the all encompassing power of K-pop. I think everyone has, there's no escape really. And Seoul is kind of the city at the heart of a lot of that as well.
Absolutely. And we have a real expert as well on all things sort of South Korean and Seoul for this episode. So we're in safe hands.
Yes, yes, we are. Because neither me nor you have been to Seoul, right?
No, but really, really want to. So we're talking a lot about Seoul at the moment and South Korean culture in DK Eyewitness. So I have to say, it's really whetting my appetite. I really want to go.
Yeah, so let's definitely find out more. So who is our guest today, Lucy?
So we've got Soo Kim. So Soo Kim is a London-based journalist and author whose book How to Live Korean was published in 2020. And the book covers everything from kimchi to K-pop, plus everything in between, unpacking what it means to be Korean in all its forms through the unfiltered eyes of an expert on Korean culture. So who better to talk to than Soo about our destination of Seoul? Hello, Soo.
Hello.
Hello. It's brilliant to have you on the podcast. We're really excited to do an episode on Seoul as well, and it's amazing to have you join us. So we're going to get to know a little bit about Soo first, and then we'll move on to the all-important recommendations and insider tips on where to go in Seoul. We'll then end in our normal way by hearing about the present day in the city and what the future holds for it.
So Soo, can you tell us a bit more about your Korean heritage?
Sure, absolutely. I've been based in London actually for the past 13 years now, but I actually grew up in New York City, which is actually home to sort of the second largest Korean population outside South Korea after China. obviously China is nearby. So my upbringing at home actually back in New York City was actually quite quintessentially Korean, because there's sort of the saying kind of among Koreans that Korean immigrants, like the Koreans in outside Korea, tend to be even more Korean than the Koreans in Korea. And I don't know if it's a thing with like maybe holding on to the heritage. There's this urgency, I think. And my parents definitely, they were of that camp, and they made sure they sent me to Korean language school, and you know, everything, we only speak Korean at home, and we kept all the traditions. And so in some ways, yeah, it was a very interesting experience growing up in such a multicultural city, but being also very Korean. Mm. So yeah, it's been kind of interesting to experience that on both sides of the pond. But my parents immigrated to the States like in the late 70s, and it's kind of interesting because they kind of went there after about half a century after my granddad first went to America to study. And he became, he joined the Korean independence movement, and which just like a brief history is kind of came up after, during the Japanese occupation period. And that's when my granddad sort of got involved in that. And he happened to sort of be mentored by these really big historical figures. One of them was An Chang-ho, who was the founding father of the Korean independence movement. And the other is Syng Man Rhee, who later became the first president of South Korea. So he kind of just stumbled upon these guys and was mentored under them, and he kind of, you know, just started getting involved in the movement and kind of traveled back and forth from Korea by boat at the time, obviously by ship. And, you know, he would do these sort of covert sort of missions. And on one of his journeys, he got called out by one of the Japanese authorities, so they arrested him. And then after that, he got arrested and sent to Japan, and he was there until the country came back. So in 1945, it was released, Japanese occupation ended, and then he was hence released, and he went back, and he kind of, yeah, he has this kind of legacy where, I mean, he was one of the few people who spoke English in the peninsula at the time, which is unheard of. And so he worked as an interpreter for the government at the time, and then lived quite a very short life. He was only 59 when he passed away, but he did all that. And I think the latter part of his career was just teaching English in schools in South Korea. But I've always sort of, I really, you know, resonate with his story because it always feels like my granddad sort of lives on through me, because my life has really paralleled like what he has done in terms of leaving his country and kind of really pioneering things. And I think, one of the most epic trips I'd done to Korea was kind of retracing his legacy in South Korea. And I went to because he's buried in the National Cemetery for Veterans at the moment. He was, he was buried there with military honors, and he was given 2 presidential honors for his services to the country. So, and it was really strange to see actually my name on a grave, because my name is on the grave as listed as his granddaughter. So, a real emotional moment seeing that. And
I'm sure. When did you retrace his steps?
That was before the pandemic. Must have been like maybe 2016, around then. And and it was a huge thing because, you know, I went and my mom joined me sort of the half of the trip, and, you know, visiting the cemetery. I went on my own in the cemetery, and then I went with her, and then we kind of retraced where my dad's from. They're both from the South, but they met in Seoul. And so we kind of retraced their kind of heritage. My mom was sort of telling me stories about how, you know, the area's changed and stuff, where she was and stuff. And so it was really, really interesting. And I think that trip really made me I kind of fell in love with the country again. And I think, you know, it really made me miss my granddad. And I wondered what he would think if he was still alive. And because he lived such a short life, so if he was still alive, I wonder how much of a fan he would be of me and a supporter of me. So, yeah, that's sort of I guess my heritage I've been sort of reconnecting with in the last few years. So, yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Really, really interesting. And I think you sort of mentioned it there, like your parents are met in Seoul, right? And have you visited Seoul much? Have you lived there before?
I've never lived in Seoul, but I mean, I went a lot more as a child, and then after as an adult, I went back as a journalist. Like, because before currently, I'm a reporter for a magazine called Newsweek. And I report regularly on South Korean culture and entertainment. So I've been doing covering a lot of the big films and K-dramas and stuff. And but before that, most of my career actually was as a travel journalist for The Telegraph here in London. So through that, I was going to covering South Korea a lot. And it was, you know, it was just always such a joy to kind of, especially because there's so much, I guess we'll talk about this later as well, but like just so much interest in recent years in South Korean culture.
Absolutely, in the last couple of years. I mean, the sort of cultural phenomenons that have come out of South Korea, but that kind of from a travel point of view mm-hmm. as well, like more and more people are visiting all the time. And I think there's a kind of fascination almost with the country all around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people kind of, at one point, I feel like it's still relatively undiscovered by a lot of people, because in some ways, I think it's maybe almost Seoul is kind of like the new Tokyo, you know, like everyone has, like, Tokyo is like on everyone's list, basically. It's on my list as well. And I feel like Seoul is kind of getting there as well, with so much interest in K-dramas and K-pop's, you know, been around for ages, but especially with K-dramas and K-films, I think people are quite keen to kind of discover the country. Because I think in the past it was more like people's gateway, I think, into Korea and South Korea has been food. There's always been such a huge explosion around food. Yeah. But I feel like it's really kind of come a long way in terms of other parts of the culture are now kind of breaking into mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what's going to put Seoul on the map as kind of, you know, the next kind of place that people want to check out.
So obviously then you went to, you know, you've been to Seoul, that's where your parents met. Mm-hmm. What is it that you love about Seoul? What is it about the city that, as you say, sort of is sort of gaining more and more attention and traction?
Mm. I think for me, I think it's always been like, just remembering like me walking down the streets and things. I think it's really the juxtaposition of the old and the new. Where it's like right in this really bustling, buzzy capital, like, and you know, it's similar to Tokyo in the sense that you see all these neon lights, and especially at night, and it's just this huge kind of, you know, playground of things that you can access in terms of food. You know, it's just a never ending supply of foods and different kinds of food. And I think in the midst of all that, and all some of the tallest buildings in the world are there as well, and all these skyscrapers, but like in the same city are like really big historic landmarks. One of my favorite parts is like the palaces. And I think just seeing how they're kind of side by side, kind of just, you know, getting along, I feel it almost is representative, I think, of the culture itself, like, because South Korea is so advanced in so many different ways, especially with technology and other aspects, but at its heart, I feel like it really does hold on to its tradition, and it really values like tradition and like especially, you know, respect for ancestors and that kind of thing. And it all boils down to like, you know, history and ancestry. That's all kind of respected as like it's valued as such wisdom. And I think the city, Seoul itself, sort of represents that. I think it, as much as it's advancing, it sort of never forgets its core. And I think that's what I find quite attractive and addictive as well about the city.
We're going to start off this section with a quick fire tour of the city, naming a few categories, and you just have to suggest just one thing to do. So if you're ready, Sue.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, let's go. So I'm going to kick off. Your favorite thing to see?
My favorite thing to see would definitely be the royal palaces. There are five in Seoul. And of them, I recommend the Gyeongbokgung Palace, which is the first one that was built. All these palaces were built during the Joseon Dynasty, which is the last, the longest lasting Confucian dynasty. And it's quite an important dynasty because it was the last dynasty before the modern era of South Korea. So a lot of sort of the remnants of that era are in modern society today. And you know, the most prominent example of that is the palace, and it's really breathtaking. And I think you would want to see Gyeongbokgung Palace, which is the largest one. And also, like, just a little tip is if you go there dressed in the Korean traditional clothes, which is called hanbok, which you can rent at any one of the shops and stuff, you get free admission. So that's what I would recommend.
That's a fantastic tip. Lucky
nice
listeners.
Tip, yeah.
Thank you, Sue. That's great. And then your favourite thing to drink?
My favourite thing to drink, although I'm not really, you know, a big heavy drinker, I would recommend if you're in Seoul, you should get makgeolli, which is a milky sort of looking rice wine drink made from fermented glutinous rice. It has a bit of a tangy, sort of subtly sweet kind of flavor, but it is the oldest alcoholic drink in Korea. It's been brewed for around 1,000 years, going back to, like, even before the Joseon Dynasty. It goes back to ancient kingdom era, and it's such a vestige of history. But in the 1970s and 80s, it kind of got lost because of so much economic boom in the country after the Korean War, and, like, a lot of Western drinks started coming into the country, so people started to prefer that over makgeolli. But, like, it's had a revival actually in the last 5-10 years, and people are sort of getting into, you know, a lot of the youth, you know, are all about going backwards, you know, and vintage trends. And I think they're kind of, so there's been a bit of a, you know, makgeolli craft makgeolli kind of scene. So I would definitely recommend you have makgeolli if you're in Seoul.
How do you drink it? Is it just sort of like plain? Do you have it with ice? Do you heat it up? Like how is it served?
It is best served cold actually. And because it's not in a cup. It usually comes in like a small bowl. And the bowl is usually actually metal. It's like a metallic. If you go to one of those like hole in the wall restaurants and you order makgeolli, it'll come in like a golden, almost some sort of metal, like tea kettle type looking thing. And then it'll come with like a bowl as well. So you drink it like as a bowl. And the reason why is because it's best served cold. So obviously if you put it in a metal bowl, it'll keep it cold as well. But also it's just sort of make sure the rice sort of doesn't separate. So that's how it's served. And you have it usually with like, kind of like appetizers. It's called anju in Korean, but anju is like any little foods that you eat while you're drinking, so little kind of snacks.
Lovely.
So you would usually have it with that, but I mean, but people have it with a huge meal as well. So
excellent. Definitely have to give that a try. That brings us on nicely to your favorite thing to eat.
This one was a very tough one to narrow down.
Yes, because
I really love Korean food. I mean, I know everyone says that, but I mean, and I know I'm biased, but it definitely is the best food in the world. So like, I love it. So it was really hard to boil down, but I was thinking about if you're in Seoul, I mean, there's so much, like we said before, Korean food has been exported so much, like it's everywhere. I mean, because of the Korean diaspora, it just makes it, you know, locally and stuff. But I think this thing I'm going to recommend, I haven't seen it very much outside. I mean, you see it actually in America, you see it a lot more. I haven't seen it as much in London. So I would probably recommend this because I remember having it the last time I was there. It was just amazing. Maybe it was a memory of having it with my mom. It's a street food. It's called bungeoppang, and it's a fish-shaped, like a warm pastry. And they make it in these like little machines, and you'll see it in like little slots as well. Like it's just, it's shaped like a goldfish, but it's filled with red bean paste, and it's a sweet dessert kind of treat. And so, but it's just so nice when they first make it. It's just like really, you know, warm, and especially it's good for like a cold winter day. But I had it in the autumn when I was there, and it was just perfect. I was just standing there with my mom, and it was really, really perfect. So I think that it's an experience. So for sure, have bungeoppang.
Love it.
Is that served like kind of fresh and warm then?
Yeah, they usually put it in just like a little wrapper, or it's a street food, so you eat it with your hands.
Amazing.
Great.
Yeah, lovely.
Great response. Okay, and then Sue, your favorite activity, your favorite day activity, I should say.
I think that would have to definitely be a hike. Even like mini hikes, and you wouldn't think, Seoul is such a huge capital that you wouldn't kind of think about it. But actually, Seoul is enclosed by like four main mountains. And actually, the country itself, 70% of the country is actually, the peninsula is covered in mountains. So it's you know, it would be a miss to sort of not do any sort of hiking, walking trail. And I think if you wanted to go for something slightly more easier, I think I would do a hike through Namsan Park. Which also has a trail along the Seoul, like Fortress Wall, which is another historic part of the city that dates back to the Joseon Dynasty. Again, it was a fortress set up to protect the capital. And just hike, you know, a little walk along that trail, or just going up through Namsan Park. You can also take a cable car to the top as well, which has been around forever. But at the top is the En-Seoul Tower, and that is actually it's an observatory, and it's one of the best views of Seoul you can get. And also at the top of that restaurant is a revolving restaurant, which is really cool. So if you can sit down and you'll always have the best view of the city just while you're eating. So I'd recommend that.
Incredible.
It sounds like a brilliant day. So next, last but not least, is your favorite museum or gallery?
I'm going to say for this one, I wanted to recommend the Dongdaemun Design Plaza, which is short for just DDP. But I really love it because the building itself, it's more like a cultural hub, like a cultural center. But the building itself is an artwork because it's designed by the great late Zaha Hadid, who is one of my favorite architects. And those who know her will know that it's very, you know, her, just the curves and the futuristic sort of designs that she's known for, it's all kind of, encapsulated in this building when you see it. And it's really beautiful, especially at night when all the lights come on. And I think it was sort of inspired by the Shard as well because of the outdoor kind of glass bits, but I think they made it more Korean by kind of adding jade elements and things. So It's really, really beautiful. It's an inspiring building, just looking at the curves and things when you're there. But then there's like little exhibition halls where they have, you know, rotating kind of exhibitions and gallery spaces there. That's where it's also in the fashion district. So that's where actually Seoul Fashion Week is also held. So yeah, it's an all around good area. So you'd probably hit a lot of different things if you go visit that center.
Great. Cool. Here endeth the quick fire round. And I thought that was, you had a lovely variety there.
No.
I thought sort of, you know, again, that's sort of old and new.
Yeah, outdoorsy, very new cultural. Like, yeah, there's definitely a lot of old and new there. And lots of tradition, like kind of nice memories coming into stuff as well. So yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you, Sue. So obviously we sort of talked a bit about Seoul, but we know that you are an expert really on Korea at large. How does Seoul stand apart from South Korea? I think you sort of have touched on a bit, but it would just be great to kind of do a bit more of a deep dive.
I think Seoul definitely has an eclectic sort of globally urban vibe that you probably will recognize. You probably recognize that kind of energy from different kind of similar cities. But I think, especially now that with Korean culture having exploded in the past just even 2-3 years, I think you can kind of get a sense of what the city will be like. But I feel like Seoul, you know, wears like many different hats and faces in terms of it can give you like everything you need. It's kind of one of those world capital cities, I think, where you could find, you know, everything and anything if you want it. And it's kind of just there. And I think that's kind of what makes it probably special, because it is one of those 24-hour type cities. But I think the rest of the country, that in itself sort of almost makes it its own country. But I think when you see the rest of the country, I feel like different pockets, the country's made of about 8 different provinces, and each province, I think, it's very different, I think, from Seoul, because it's much less global in terms of, obviously, there's not as many. There are different, there are foreigners as well who, you know, teach or work in different parts of the country, but it's not as concentrated as it is in Seoul. And I think different parts offer like really different things. Like, for example, the city of Gyeongju in Gyeongsangbuk-do, which is where my father is from, and it's kind of located a bit further south, and, you know, you'll find a lot of the UNESCO sites there. I mean, the country has about 15 or so UNESCO sites, and, you know, that's kind of where people would be going, and that's very, like, countryside vibes there. And if you go to, like, the Cholla region, there's Cholla Namdo and Cholla Bukdo, which is the two separate provinces, but that's actually where my mom is from. And that's at the very south coast as well. It's just off the coast of Jeju Island as well. So that area is like, if you say you're from Cholla, everyone would know that, you know, you must have grown up in amazing food, and it's known for its rich regional cuisine. So that's kind of an example. I mean, if you go even into like Gangwon-do province as well, like that's where the DMZ area is. And obviously that in itself, like the DMZ, obviously it always puts on like this, you know, there's always an air of tension because of the ongoing sort of conflict, which is, you know, it's technically still ongoing. So that province is interesting because the northern half obviously of the province sits in North Korea and the southern half is in South Korea. But, you know, there's much more to do than just the DMZ in that area. There's, because around 80% of that region itself is just mountainous. So people go there as a country escape as well. And also some of the best beaches are there as well, because it's along the East Coast. So, yeah, I feel like there's so many different, there's so many different cities as well as like just little regions. And also, you know, if you go around the country, you see and hear so many of the different accents as well, which, you know, you wouldn't be able to see, I think, or hear. I mean, even if you just go outside, not very far, even if you go just to, like, the second largest city in South Korea is Busan. And, you know, even if you go there, it's a very different accent, and it's similar to what I, because my dad's area had a really strong accent, so, like, I can kind of recognize that more. And so that in itself, I think, kind of represents, like, how different everyone is around the country.
I mean, kind of zoning back into Seoul just for a second, like are there any sort of like surprising aspects or like areas of the city that listeners might not know about?
I would say kind of like one of the areas I think I recently kind of came onto my radar was this little sort of neighborhood called Seongsu-dong, which is just north of the Han River. I mean, the Han River, or just say Hangang in Korean, it bisects the capital, and so, I mean, going back to like that era, another era, very famous era that's become very famous through Korean culture is Gangnam, through the song of the same name. And Gangnam, it literally means south of the river. So, and it's, you know, it's one of the wealthiest districts, I think, in the country, actually, one of the wealthiest plots of land. So all the celebrities live there, and all the huge tech companies and all the big entertainment agencies, everyone lives there. But
because if I've got it right, that song is like a satire, isn't it?
It is. Like it really is. Yes. Because obviously everyone has a very specific, you know, really lavish lifestyle in Gangnam. I mean, this is where all the celebrities are. So then the guy who sings at Psy, he is also from Gangnam. So it's like, it's almost ironic that he's like making a satire of where he's from as well. But yeah, that song is an entire, you know, satire of how society, it's like so rich there. So, but I mean, Gangnam has a lot of like charm as well. I mean, I've been to many hotels around the world. I was lucky enough to through my job, and you know, I love hotel bars, and some of the best hotel bars are also in Seoul as well. And one of them is in Gangnam.
Cool.
At the Park Hyatt, Seoul. And the reason why is because I remember staying at the Park Hyatt Seoul, and like, at the, I really felt like I was doing like an a scene from like Lost in Translation, because you know, in Lost in Translation, you're at the Park Hyatt Tokyo, and I felt kind of like I was having a Scarlett Johansson moment, because I was just at the bar, I was on my own at the time, and then I was just having some sushi, and I just thought, is my Bill Murray going to walk in here anytime soon? But I remember thinking
I'm guessing he didn't.
Yeah, I just had my sushi and I went back to my room. That hotel is really beautiful because of the bar as well. But they've got this incredible infinity pool, and it's really like, you know, you really feel like you're at the edge. I would recommend that if you're in Gangnam, Park Hyatt, Seoul. Going back to the question of like places that maybe people might not know of, there's this kind of up and coming area called Seongsu-dong, which is just north of the Han River, and it's sort of been, I think, pegged as kind of like the Brooklyn of Seoul. I don't know if you guys know about Brooklyn. I actually grew up in Brooklyn in New York, so it's very strange to see how hipster it has become. I mean,
it's become a byword.
It really has.
I guess across
it
the world.
It absolutely has, and I think Brooklyn. I mean, I also grew up in I grew up in Williamsburg, which is the hipsterest of Brooklyn, and so
I've been to Williamsburg.
Yeah, it's just honestly Shoreditch in America. It's the same exact thing. So I was very much so surprised at seeing how it's changed. But like, so to give you an example, Seongsu-dong is kind of becoming that vibe. It's has a Brooklyn vibe to it because it has a lot of cool shops and cafes, sort of like in converted warehouse spaces or industrial kind of feel. And that's actually tying back to the makgeolli. There's this makgeolli brewery there called Hangang Brewery, and they're trying to kind of, you know, revive the craft scene and stuff. So yeah, if you're in Seongsu-dong, you should probably go to that Hangang Brewery for the makgeolli.
Cool, amazing,
fantastic. Well, you're really whetting appetite, I must say, Sue. And then finally, I just wanted to ask you, sort of, you know, you touched on around the city more. Are there day trips to be had? Are there places just outside of Seoul in the surrounding area? You know, you've talked about kind of the mountains and hiking. Mm-hmm. Sort of, are there some specific kind of nearby day trips, I suppose?
Yeah, I think actually there's plenty to do because it's very well connected by the high-speed train as well as just the rail. So the KTX is the high-speed train, and Korail is just the national rail system. And it's like, thanks to that, like, I mean, they built a new one when they were doing the Pyeongchang Olympics as well. It makes it so easy to access. So I mentioned Busan before. Busan is the country's second city. And, you know, it's the fifth busiest port in the world. But I think the great thing about Busan is, like, you get the beach as well as the city. So it's almost like Seoul, but, like, plus a beach coast. So, it's a great thing, and it only takes about 2.5 hours or 3 hours by train, which is nothing. It's like a day trip, basically. I would recommend highly Busan but anywhere really. Busan is all the way on the south coast as well, and you know Seoul is all the way sort of the north. So given that it only takes about 2-3 hours, I think you know you're not really limited because the train. Me recommending Busan is like recommending the opposite ends of the country, but like it's really easy to do. It's only in 2-3 hours, so I think you're really not limited. I think if you feel like just kind of exploring, KTX and Korail will allow that to happen.
Because I know, and you mentioned the Winter Olympics there as well, and that happened, those were held just north of Seoul, right?
I think it was probably only maybe just an hour outside. I can't remember. But yeah, it was north of Seoul.
But I was going to say that's some real sort of, I don't know, like differing climates there. Mm. If you've got beach 3 hours south.
And, it really is.
And sort of ski resorts, etc., 1 hour north.
It's really crazy how the climate's so different. But I mean, having said that, like, in terms of another destination, I feel like it would be a miss to not visit Jeju Island while you're in Seoul, because, again, it's not very hard to get to. It's only in... You have to get on a plane, obviously. I mean, you could get on a boat, but you'd have to go all the way to the Cholla region, actually, where my mom is from, and then you can catch a boat from there. But I think it'd be easier because it's just an hour by plane and by domestic. So it's very, and people easily do it, like in terms of as a weekend trip, lots of people do it. It's like a local thing where people just go to Jeju for the weekend. I've had friends who had relationships with people in Jeju and like Seoul, you know, they made it work because it's just Jeju and Seoul. So definitely it's doable for relationships as well as, you know, anything else. But you've got to see Jeju, I think, because Jeju is dubbed the Hawaii of South Korea. So you've got to see Jeju. And if you go to Jeju, there's it's a very interesting island in terms of like the, I don't know if you guys know about them, the Haenyeo community, which is the female diving clan. And they're actually UNESCO designated the actual clan as an intangible cultural heritage because, you know, they're one of the only examples of a matriarchal society, because obviously the rest of South Korea and the Korean Peninsula is patriarchal. And I think they, from the 17th century, was it? Like they've been, you know, they were the breadwinners, and that was because, you know, a lot of the men went off to war during the Japanese occupation period, and also some of the men just would go fishing and then they would just die. And so a lot of it kind of boiled down to necessity, but then they, you know, the women were the ones, and these people are, you know, these women are just diving. They're not like highly kind of, you know, trained at some, you know, specialist school or anything. They just, it's just passed down through generations of how to do the diving. And they use a very unique breathing technique that's, again, been passed down for centuries. And, you know, they don't dive with any diving tanks or anything. They just go down with their masks and their diving suits. So, and these women are like easily in their 70s, some of them even in their 80s.
Wow.
So it's such a, it's like, they're like living legends, kind of, basically, like, you know, mothers of the sea, kind of, I think they're called. So that in itself is interesting to see on Jeju Island, and just the volcanic landscape as well. And there's just so much in Jeju. It would feel like a shame if you're in Seoul to not just get on that flight to go see Jeju.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Seoul. That was a terrible, terrible part. It wasn't meant to be, I swear. It was going to happen at some point today. Sue, that was a beautiful, beautiful introduction, not just to Seoul, but to the rest of South Korea. And we are now going to talk about sort of the present times in Seoul and South Korea too. One of Asia's cultural capitals, Seoul is a perfect blend of traditional and modern. It's both a fashion hub and a food lover's paradise. And our top 10 Seoul travel guide will ensure you find your way around this dynamic city with absolute ease. Find it in all good bookshops or via the link in our episode bio.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
just realizing, obviously, we've alluded to during the episode a bit about like the kind of cultural boom of South Korea, or like just the interest, particularly from the West, I guess, and that's using the West in the old-fashioned sense of the word. But this kind of like explosion of interest in Korea. Do you mind if I just kind of ask you a little bit about how that's been picked up in Korea and in South Korea, and like kind of how people have reacted to it, whether they're aware of it or whether they're completely oblivious and it's just business as usual for them, I guess.
I think probably just seeing on social media, to just give an example of this, because this is quite recent, I interviewed the main actor from Squid Game, Lee Jung-jae, who is, you know, the SAG Award-winning, Emmy-nominated, Golden Globe-nominated actor, and he's just been everywhere. He's been Mr. It, you know? And I think he's kind of an example of how, you know, obviously I was honored to interview him, but, like, everyone in the country, because obviously he was introduced via, you know, ages ago, like at Cannes, like 2010 or something, with a huge film, but, like, people didn't really know who he was until Squid Game, and I think everyone was saying, obviously, he has this image, you know, really kind of disheveled image in the series as needed. But like in South Korea, in the domestic fans, like he's now aged, but like in his heyday, I mean, I remember watching dramas when he first came out, you know, everyone was like such all the rage over him. He was like an absolute heartthrob, like, you know, the biggest movie star. He still is the biggest movie star in South Korea. Yeah. So it's like the fans, I remember they were so quick to defend, like when people are like, oh, you know, he's seeing all this like stardom. You see all these people on social media, like, you know, bringing out the archive, you know, footage of him like topless and like looking like amazing. And so it was really funny. But I feel like Koreans in general, I think there's so much like pride. There, in a good sense, like patriotism is very strong. And I think it's probably because, you know, they've come out of, you know, Japanese occupation and like after the Korean War as well. I mean, the country suffered, you know, a lot of financial, you know, fallouts after the Korean War as well. But then if you think about it, it's in a very relatively very short period of time in terms of like, you know, late 70s. From then on, they were kind of really boomed. And then now, you know, they're one of the poorest countries in the world, South Korea, before, just after the Korean War, especially. And then, you know, now they're the 10th biggest economy in the world. So it's kind of like, it's a huge jump in relatively just like half a century. And so, and it's actually referred to as like the miracle on the Han because of that. The country realizes how quickly it was able to get itself off its feet. And I think these are the reasons why I think it really takes a lot of pride in its culture and what it's achieved. And I think, I feel like all the fans and all the like locals are really proud of how much love Korean culture is like finally getting. And I mean, it's always been getting that much love in terms of K-pop. But I think with K-dramas is such a quintessential part of the Korean cultural experience. And it's so funny to see it now sort of exploding globally. And people are like, you know, a lot of the K-dramas, I think, are kind of being made almost for export now. You know, the companies are sort of realizing, oh, we've got to think about how can we make this globally, you know, relevant? And I think it's interesting because the Korean dramas, it's slightly different, like the ones that air on the Korean channels, which I, you know, I find still addictive. But you can kind of see how it's been slightly like, oh, they're trying to make it a little bit more, you know, relevant globally. And I think maybe that's sort of a little bit of the change that I'm seeing. But like the country, not that it was ever insular, but I think maybe it's becoming more aware of its like, value, or just how much you know, how people are kind of awakening to you know, Korea's cultural and entertainment offerings. And I think maybe now the country's starting to kind of think, oh, let's try to maximize this and see what we can do with it. So it feels like that's maybe a bit of the change that's happening in the last maybe 5-6 years or something.
So I guess it's the awareness of the audience and the increased audience, really. But it's really hard to put your finger on it because it's so many different things that have come out from that kind of cultural explosion. So K-pop is almost this hyper-pop, like endemic version of of what pop music is kind of becoming and was like 5 years or so ago. But I mean, Korean dramas, as you say, they have their own kind of like complete take on drama. There's lots of suspense, there's lots of experimentation in scripts, etc. But basically, yes, it's Koreans finding a worldwide audience, and I think people are really just starting to appreciate what a special country it really, really is.
And it's really heartwarming to see it, because it's almost similar to how when I left New York, you know, because it was such a part of my DNA, when it's so close to heart, you don't realize how special it is. And I think when I left New York and I come here, people are always just so, you know, speak so highly of New York City. And I think I feel the same way when people talk about South Korean culture and anything to do with Korea. Like, I feel very, very proud of my heritage. And I'm so glad my parents, you know, made sure I stayed very Korean under their watch. They were like, you're not going to forget how to speak Korean or anything. So I'm very, very glad they did that, even though I grew up, abroad.
We've talked about the sort of cultural phenomenon, et cetera. But in terms of like the last couple of years, obviously, we've had a global pandemic, et cetera. How is Seoul kind of coping at the minute? Is it kind of like, is everything back to normal from what you hear?
I think the country is definitely wanting to get tourism back. I think it was maybe April or so, the country kind of officially opened its doors so that it can start to encourage people to come in. And I think in terms of numbers, like, I think it's like with any country, it's kind of like it can go either way, you know, in any instant. So maybe that's sort of the logic that South Korea has had as well. Like, we can't just kind of shut everything out forever. I mean, in the beginning of the pandemic, they were very, really strict in terms of, and very actually quite a model country, because I remember reporting on South Korea at the time, and they were just so the model country in terms of like getting like literally everybody tested that they possibly could in order to like make sure it's, you know, the outbreak is stopped in its tracks. Like, they wanted to get down to patient zero. And I think, you know, they really try to make sure that everything is in place. Like, they want to do the right thing. And I think at the same time, they know that they need tourism as well. So I think it's kind of like they're definitely keen to have people and the country's open. And I think, I mean, in terms of like busy times, it would be busy around the summertime, I suppose, because, you know, obviously school's out as well, so all the locals will be out as well. But I think the pandemic has definitely, you know, affected the country as it has in every other country economically. Mm-hmm. And even though it is one of the biggest in the top 10 economies in the world, they've, you know, trying to recover as well. And, you know, obviously recently they had like a huge bit of flooding as well, which was really, really devastating. But you know, that's down to the climate as well.
So on this podcast, you've done a fantastic job, Sue, of selling Korea, and you've really done the country justice. When would be the best time that you would recommend, or your favourite time when you would recommend listeners go? You mentioned being there in autumn with your mum. But yeah, when would you recommend would be a great time to visit?
I would definitely, autumn would be one of them, or spring, because it kind of, South Korea has a very like temperate climate, but there are like four distinct seasons. I would say it's similar to New York City, actually. I don't know if it's maybe similar latitude or something, but like it's similar. But in terms of the summer weather is very like really hot, like even hotter than New York City, which is pretty bad there, but it's really humid as well. So I think from like weather-wise, in terms of level of comfort, I think the perfect weather would be autumn or spring. And actually, I mean, the two kind of, I guess it kind of ties in with like reasons to visit, but like the autumn, if you go, I mean, if I guess you'd have to go a little bit earlier, but is kind of like the autumn festival, harvest festival as well, Chuseok, which is kind of it's coming up very soon, but it's like a huge, one of the biggest festivals. And, you know, holidays in South Korea. And then in like around March to April, that springtime is when the cherry blossoms season kind of goes. So I think that's probably why I would recommend going around that time, like March, April, springtime would be good, because then you get to see all the beautiful cherry blossom. And cherry blossoms are especially beautiful in the palaces. And it really brings you back. Oh, yeah, it really brings you back in time once you see the cherry blossoms as well.
I was going to say, there's a book we published a couple of years ago called Where to Go When, and I think it recommends going to Seoul in October or November. I can't remember which one.
Does. Yes, it does. I think it's October.
But beautiful, like you talked about the mountains around mm-hmm. Seoul and the parks, etc. And everything looks like it's in this beautiful like kind of orange glow mm-hmm. of like autumnal glow. Just remember those pictures very, very clearly and looking wonderful. So I will definitely look into that. As I say, it's very much on my list, and I'm there. And it's been fantastic to learn a lot about Seoul and South Korea from you today, Sue. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm always very happy and proud to talk about Korea and my heritage. Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. So a huge, huge thank you to Sue. That was wonderful. It's brilliant, Lucy. I think we've talked about to quite a lot of people on the podcast who live, immerse themselves in their cities, etc. Whereas I thought it was fascinating to hear from Sue kind of how her Korean identity has like really underpinned all her childhood and seeing Seoul both as an insider and an outsider as well. And I think she had a wonderful perspective on it. It was it was really, really fascinating.
And it was really lovely to hear about her family, about her wonderful grandfather and her parents and how they met in Seoul. It was just, I really felt it was a real window. It was fantastic. Thank you so much, Sue.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. So you can follow what Sue's up to on Instagram. So she's at miss.sue.kim. And on Twitter, where she's at Miss Sue Kim. And just a quick reminder that her book, How to Live Korean, is now available from wherever you get your books. And Sue actually sent us a quick note just now to remind us that it's available in 8 different languages. So it's available in English, Spanish, French, Russian, Dutch, Hungarian, Bulgarian, and Slovak. So no excuses, unless you don't speak any of those languages. And it's a fantastic read as well. So join us in our next episode, where we'll be speaking to journalist Lucy Grace about her new home of Thailand, but also about some of her flight-free adventures over this summer. So a bit of a hybrid episode. It's going to be very interesting.
Intriguing.
So I'll see you then, Lucy.
I'll see you then.
And we shall see you very soon.
Where to Go was produced by the team at DKI Witness and the wonderful Julia Baker. It was presented by James Atkinson and Lucy Richards and mastered by Johnny Coddington at Bottle Rocket Recording. For more information about DKI Witness, follow us on social media at DKI Eyewitness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
And don't forget to please like, rate, review and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Your support means so much to us.
one-800-flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-flowers.com/ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.